Morning. If we haven't had a chance to meet yet, my name is Gordon Killow, one of the ministers here. I want to show you here behind me a postcard I have on my notice board. My wife sent it to me when she was visiting a friend in Sarajevo. Now, you might have postcards like this where there are snapshots taken within a place showing key architecture or historic sites or parts that take you to the central culture of a place. And behind it all is a sort of a panorama of the whole city. And as you get here, you've got Sarajevo spread across. So you've got the close-ups and how they all fit into the big picture. Well, today's Good Friday, and I'm guessing that most of us have some of the snapshots clear in our minds about Good Friday. We have Jesus on trial. We have a Roman governor. We have the crucifixion itself. But how do all those snapshots fit together? What is it? What is the panorama that brings them all together? I want to answer that question this morning by looking at four scenes from the passage that we've just heard read over John chapter 18 and 19. And the first scene is from the crucifixion itself. Now, the Romans had a practice that when someone was crucified, they nailed a sign above them and it stated the crime. Well, in John chapter 19, verse 19 and 20, read, Pilate had a notice prepared and fastened to the cross. It read, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. I'll leave it at that. Now, Pilate was really making a mockery of the Jews by putting this notice above a crucified man. But John records it because of the unintended truth that lay behind this notice. Jesus was king. The sign was put in three languages, in Aramaic, Latin, and Greek. Basically, anyone who saw it from anywhere in the Roman Empire would be able to read it. Jesus is not just king of the Jews. He's King of Kings. He is King of all. Now, hard to recognize if you were to see him nailed to a cross and dying, but he was still King. 100 years ago, Charlie Chaplin, when he was at the height of his career, entered a Charlie Chaplin lookalike competition, and he didn't even make the finals. Now, he wasn't recognised as he got dressed up as the tramp and did the walk, but just because he wasn't recognised, it didn't stop him being the true Charlie Chaplin. There are many who do recognise and worship Jesus as the King of all. There are many others who don't, for whom Jesus is just a swear word, or for whom they like the symbolism of Christianity, or even to have the name Christian, but none of the content, or even those who just ignore him completely. But whether we recognize him or not makes no difference to this fact. Jesus is our King, and we owe him our allegiance. That's the first snapshot. The second snapshot is taken just before that first scene that I've described. This is the complete rejection of Jesus by the Jewish leaders. Try and picture the scene. It's early on Friday morning. They have been going all night. And these Jewish leaders are determined to have Jesus executed. Pilate, the Roman governor, mocks them. He stands Jesus in front of them and says, "Here is your king." And then they say these words, chapter 19, verse 15, "We have no king but Caesar." Now, that's an extraordinary comment for these people to make. They actually hated Caesar. They hated Rome. These were their oppressors. They were cruel. They were pagans. The Jews believed that God is their only true king. Now, again, John records this snapshot, because of the truth behind it. What we have here is a picture of all of us, a picture of all humanity. Our Maker, God, is our ruler. And he sent Jesus into the world to express his rule. But we all reject him. Now, if we refuse God as our ruler, then we replace him with another ruler. Human rule, tyranny, selfishness, self-rule, anything but God. And it's always self-destructive. The recent meeting of the G20 nations, the most powerful economies in the world, all met together to respond to the economic crisis facing the world. And what was the result? A few regulations based on one realization: greed is not good. Markets can't be trusted to regulate themselves because people are greedy. Now, it took all this time and all these people to say what God's word had said all along: that greed is idolatry, it's another God. But if you refuse to let God rule you, you will always choose another ruler, and it will always be self-destructive. The third snapshot is the cross itself. The normal way that Jews exercised capital punishment was by stoning. But the Jewish leaders didn't want Jesus to be stoned. Chapter 18, verse 31. Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," the Jews objected. It's true that Jewish mobs did sometimes arrest people and stone them to death. But the Jewish leaders wanted the Romans to crucify Jesus. Why is that? Well, there was a passage in their law, in the Old Testament, that made it clear. It said in the book of Deuteronomy that anyone who is hung on a tree is under a curse, is under God's curse. They wanted Jesus not just killed, but totally discredited. See, any Jew who saw Jesus hanging on a cross would never believe his claim, or any claim, that he could be God's chosen ruler. How could he be? Because he's under God's curse. It's a bit like a gruesome first century version of Mythbusters. They're discrediting any claim that he could have had. But if you make a big claim, if you make a claim of something being a myth and you make a big show of it, you want to make sure you're right. Just think of the recent case with Coca-Cola and their ad, trying to bust a few myths about Coke, things like, well, you won't put on weight and you won't get tooth decay. But, of course, they were forced to print a different version of the ad and retract some of the things that they said. And, in fact, the correction that they printed only strengthened the claim that, well, these things aren't myths, but they're true. They set out to discredit some myths and in the end gave weight to their truth. The Jews wanted to discredit Jesus by having him crucified. They said, well, we can't crucify him. We have no right to. But look what John says in the very next verse. This happened so that the words Jesus had spoken, indicating the kind of death he was going to die, would be fulfilled. There are several times in John's gospel leading up to this point that Jesus said, "I will be lifted up." He knew the way he would be killed. He knew he would die by crucifixion. He knew he would die under God's curse. But that's why he came. All people reject his rule. Now, we try to make the best of life our own way with our own rule. But God is still in charge. God isn't surprised by our rebellion, and he's not overruled. He remains in control. The Jews thought that they had the final say over Jesus, but God was at work. He used their hatred, their rebellion, the injustice of the cross, and he bent it all to his will to accomplish his purposes. And that purpose is in our final snapshot. I wonder if the most surprised day on Good Friday wasn't Barabbas. Try and picture him. See, the Jews were in the courtyard of the palace speaking to Pilate, and the prison was most likely within 1,000 metres. And so Barabbas could probably hear the roars of the crowd. And what were the roars of the crowd? Well, firstly, that he would have heard, "Barabbas! Barabbas!" And then there was some more discussion. And then the next things he probably heard was, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And a little while later, there would have been some footsteps coming down his corridor, the key going into the cell door and it creaking open. I'm sure by then he was looking for anything to hold on to because he wasn't going to let them take him. But then he heard the words, "Barabbas, you're free to go." In one sense, Jesus had taken his place. But in the ultimate sense, Jesus was taking everyone's place. And this is what Good Friday is about. Exchange. Barabbas was guilty of rebellion. He sentenced to death and then freed. Jesus declared innocent, charged with rebellion and then put to death. Barabbas was set free despite his guilt. It was the last thing that he expected and the last thing he deserved. Jesus is the King. We reject him and he is put to death. What we deserved is given to him. We were under the curse of God for our rebellion. We were deserving punishment, but Jesus took our place. And this is why Christians have always celebrated Good Friday. We put our trust in Jesus and we change places. Death for life. Now, all of these four snapshots come together in one verse of the New Testament. It's 1 Peter chapter 3:18. Graham read it as we came in this morning. And I'll read it for you. "Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God." Good Friday is about an exchange. If you acknowledge Jesus as having taken the punishment that you deserved, then you are set free, you are forgiven, and you are brought to God, spiritually now, and ultimately after this life, in person. We all know a few snapshots of Easter, a few snapshots, famous scenes of Good Friday. Put them all together and make sure that you are there in it. Make sure you are there in that last scene especially. Make sure this is for you. "Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God."